Okay,
why am I not getting music?
Go to Radio 9. Okay.
Hi. Hold on.
Come on. Oh, I know what happened here. All right, 1 second. We are starting all over again. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, here we go. Welcome to RadioOrNot.com. The Nicole Sandler Show is, well, we made it. And if you could see what was going on here for the last 15 minutes, you'd be as surprised as we are, too. Yes, I'm coming to you live from Los Angeles. If I look a little worse for wear, it's because I got on a flight this morning at, the flight left my Fort Lauderdale at 7:40 this morning. So it is now, it's 6:04 on the East Coast. It is, so if I translated that to West Coast time, I would have gotten on the flight at 4 this morning. So, I'm a little sort of out of it. But we are here. I am here at my friend Amy Simon's house. And Amy, come say hello. All right, we are in Amy's kitchen. I'm going to turn the camera around, and I'm going to head over there. So, Amy, say hello.
Hi.
That is Amy. Oh, I got to turn your mic on. All right, Amy Simon,
hello.
Who has been on this program many times.
Hello, hello, hello.
The fun part is going to be moving my microphone over there. In fact, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to walk around there. See, today's President's Day, and for those of you who, have, you've heard Amy on the show before, know that Amy is a historian. She is the writer, producer, host of the longest running solo show, performer of the longest running solo show in Los Angeles called Cheerios in My Underwear. And now that her kids are they're growing up, it was based on her life as a stay-at-home mom. And but now Amy's branching out, and it's not just about motherhood, it's about womanhood and the role that women have played throughout the years in American history. And the reason, Amy, that you got into this is, well, explain.
I guess it was the divorce.
Ah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've always been into women's history because I had a teacher in ninth grade that sort of planted the little feminist seed in me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been just fascinated with women and always had cool women in my life.
Right.
And then I was a product of the 70s, the me generation. We can have it all, do it all. And, then I got married and had my kids and gave up life in the paid workforce for the great unpaid work of stay-at-home parenting. And had no idea, really, what I was giving up and sacrificing, although I don't regret it. But it was when I got divorced that I realized how little has changed in many ways in our society in the way parenting and caregiving is not valued, especially financially and economically.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very naive. For a girl who came out of the 70s, this feminist type of person, to realize that rut-row. I've been out of the paid workforce for 14 years, and I had no idea I wasn't paying into Social Security, and I had no pension, and my children were my resume, and then I went out looking for a job and bang smack into the wall of maternal profiling and gender bias and got all pissed off and started reading about all the laws and the way it's all working, and here I am.
So because you haven't paid into Social Security all these years, does that mean when you hit 65, you don't get Social Security?
There's a huge gap. And I don't understand all of it either. I know that when I was married, I'm entitled to some financial part of my ex-husband's.
Because he did very, very well for himself.
Yes, he did.
So I would guess that he paid a lot of money into Social Security that you are entitled to at least a good part of that.
Supposedly, but the point remains that for 14, there's a 14-year gap. I mean, I worked a little, did a few commercials and things here and there, but, you know, you, when you look at your statement when it mm-hmm. comes and you see, you know, the income, that when I left the paid workforce in 1993, mm-hmm. I was earning about $60,000 a year. And it's very interesting to go see zero
right.
the next couple of years and then, right. you know, $2,000 here and there and... Yeah, but I was very naive about that, and there's a lot of great books out there. Leslie Bennett's wrote this book called The Feminine Mistake, which is a play on the feminine mystique,
sure.
you know, where she warns women against not ever giving up work in the, you know, in the paid workforce, because when you stay at home, whether you're male or female, but, you know, it's mostly female, you become completely financially dependent upon the breadwinner, and the breadwinner is usually the man.
Right.
So,
but you know, we don't normally think about the fact that, you know, that when you retire and what you pay into Social Security, and so you can't expect.
Honestly, I feel, you know, I mean, it's been such a learning curve for me, because when I got married, I actually didn't understand that I was entering into a legal agreement. I didn't get it. That it was a business partnership, and of course, marriage was originally started. Love had nothing to do with it. Marriage. Hmm. When marriage first started, it was arranged. It was who had the dowry, who had...
Right. It was arranged by the parents.
It was based on what you could give each other, you know, what you could... And in the other days...
Oh, now Johnny O in the chat room says, you get Social Security based on your top 10 years. So if that's the case, you were in the workforce for 10 years.
I was in the workforce for 37 years.
Okay, so
well, no.
It'll be based, then though, on
not
your
37
top...
37 years. That would make me very old.
If Johnny O is correct, then it'll be based
what do you mean
on...
top 10 years? What is that?
The top 10 earning years?
Oh, the most money
right.
I earned?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if that's true...
I never earned a lot of money.
But even, you know, if it was based on $60,000 mm-hmm. a year, then...
That was 1 year. Three years. No, but still, here's the interesting right. thing, okay? So I worked in the music business. This
yes,
is a good point.
That's how we met.
That's right. how we met. And I started working in the music business when I was 21, 22, mm-hmm. and I earned $11,000 a year Ooh. As a secretary for RCA Records.
Uh-huh.
Worked my way up. Now, it took me 10 years to earn $60,000.
Yeah.
So, think about that. Now, I've been...
But, you know, back in 93, $60,000 was a decent...
Yeah.
You
and
know,
for a single woman...
Right.
Yeah, I did fine. I did, you know, and I didn't have a high standard of living. I wasn't mm-hmm. supporting anyone but myself.
Right.
And, you know, I wasn't a crazy spender. So, yeah, I felt like I was rich because I had come out of being an actress, which I never made any money. So, I right. was doing great. But the point is, it took me 10 years to rate, you know, get up to that, to earn that potential. And now I've been at home for, now it's been 17 years.
Mm.
And my economic value has gone straight down. Instead of investing in my future, you know, I have to start all over. Whereas my ex-husband, he just continued to earn and earn and earn. He did not pay what they call the mommy tax, mm-hmm. which is an actual term that Ann Crittenden coined, yeah. which is what they compute for stay-at-home anybody. If it's a, you know, but it's, like I said, it's usually women who stay home. And they compute that if you're college educated, you and you stay at home, you will lose $1 million in your lifetime.
Wow.
Because you gave up your paid job.
Right. And I think, you know, one of the things that needs to be reset probably in our society is the whole idea that a woman who stays at home and raises her kids is not working. You know, I'm doing the air quotes, because she is, and right. there should be a dollar value
uh-huh.
assigned to that.
Of course. Of course.
But that is just one of many
yeah.
problems in the
well,
way.
Well, and it's what all the, you know, the gals that I write about, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Victoria Woodhull, Frances Wright, all the women that started fighting for our rights, they ask for the exact same things that we look for today, child care,
mm-hmm.
equal opportunity in the workplace, equal education, and of course we've made tremendous strides in many areas, but... We have not come along as long way, baby, as I'd like us to.
Right. Well,
and
you know,
proof right
and,
here.
And I keep going back to the fact that here we are, it's 2010, and we still don't have the Equal Rights Amendment. I mean, the ERA never passed, which blows my mind. And the efforts towards that seem to have just mm-hmm. stopped.
Yeah.
You know, women's rights, and it was all brought back to light this year, not with Lilly Ledbetter, but with the health care reform bill and Bart Stupak and these old white guys trying to decide for us what we can and can't do with our bodies. And therein lies a big problem.
Big.
All right, so here we are. We are actually in Amy's kitchen.
And we're drinking tea.
We're drinking tea, although I left mine over there, but I'll get it in a minute.
And why are we drinking tea?
Why are we drinking tea?
Oh, because everything happened in the women's movement over tea.
Oh.
I mean, tea has, especially today, the tea baggers, but tea has played such a big part in our country, in our history. But for women, you know, you sit around the coffee table, you drink coffee or tea. But I always think about the Seneca Falls Convention. Seneca Falls is where the whole women's movement actually started, the very first real women's rights convention. And it came out of a tea party.
Okay.
So I don't know what's going to come out of this. We're sitting around, we're drinking our tea. Who knows what's going to happen?
Right. Now, we are going to talk about... we'll talk about spineless by retiring. Yes, we will do that, Mr. Evans. We'll get there. I figured, you know, Amy, for as long as I've known her, she's a mom, you know,
and
she's better at the mothering stuff than I am. I'm not much of the homemaker. I always joke that I'm domestically challenged.
A lot of people are.
I am in no sin.
Okay. Look at you. What else you can do? You can do all this other stuff.
I can do this.
Now we all have our gifts.
We set up. I brought all the equipment, so this is the dry run. Because let me just give you the schedule for the week. Okay. Yes, I am here in Los Angeles. By the way, it is a magnificent day.
Gorgeous.
I landed at 10:30 this morning, Pacific time, to blue skies. It had to have been 75 degrees out. Just gorgeous, with a high of around 80 today here in L.A. A lot warmer than it's been in South Florida for the last few days. Magnificent. I love it here. So we came in for the landing, and I wanted to take a picture out of the plane window because we came over the snow-capped mountains. Oh, just magnificent. And then I realized my phone was dead, so it didn't get the picture. But set up the little makeshift studio here, and as you can tell, everything is working. If we lose connection momentarily, it's a DSL thing. But I think we got it working now. But we'll be back. If we lose connection, we'll be back. But anyway, so we decided we were going to talk today that it is President's Day, and Amy, you know, does all her research on the women, and behind every one of those male presidents, there was a woman. Now, some of the first ladies were much better than before we get there, I was going to talk about the schedule for the week. So we're here today in Amy's kitchen, and in addition to talking about, you know, President's Day and the first ladies and stuff, Amy's going to show us some cooking. What are we making?
I'm making
today?
Soup.
Soup. Okay, we're making...
Here's the thing about the whole cooking
thing. I thought we were going to do guac.
We're doing everything.
Okay.
We'll do things. You want your guac right now?
Well, whatever.
All right.
You're the cook.
You know, we watch all these cooking shows, and I love them. I learn a lot, and you know, everything looks so easy, 30-minute. Nothing's easy.
Uh-huh.
And so I just thought I would make a real cooking show where, you address the issues of you have to buy the food.
Yes.
First you have to go out and get the food. Then you have to, like, clean it half the time. And if you want to eat well, you have to eat fresh. So you have to go every couple of days for fresh produce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that stuff doesn't really...
Yeah, and then it goes bad if you don't eat it fast
enough. Right, so that's what I'm going to use the food I have in my house. So I'm going to make a soup. I'm going to, you know, make a lot of healthy food. And then I'll show you the chocolate mousse that I made the other... I know. Mm. I was saving that for later.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, so I'm right now I'm making some soup because I have some leftover stuff that I want to. And anytime you put onions and butter together, it's good.
Oh,
so.
How is the butter healthy?
Well, not. I didn't say everything.
You put butter in soup?
Well, I'm cooking my onions first.
Oh, okay.
First, I'm going to saute my onions in butter to get that, and then I'll add everything. You'll see as we go.
All right. So anyway, the schedule for the week. Here's the deal. Now, tomorrow I have a few appointments, so there will not be a show tomorrow night. And picking my boyfriend, David, up at the airport at 4:30 tomorrow afternoon. So another reason why there will be no show, because West Coast time, it's 3 to 5. So we're going to have dinner tomorrow night with John Amato from Crooks and Liars. And I've got some business stuff to attend to during the day tomorrow. On Wednesday... If all goes as it's supposed to, I will be at a beautiful recording studio in Santa Monica with all my equipment here and Jackson Browne. Jackson Browne doing a live interview I'm hoping he's going to bring guitar. I believe there's a piano in the studio. We'll see. I'm not sure of the setup. But anyway, so that's the game plan now. Then on Thursday and Friday, we'll be down in San Diego for this wonderful music conference called the Sunset Sessions. So we'll be, you know, talking politics and music, and, you know, we'll see what happens. It's sort of a winging it week. And, you know, Congress is out. They're on their President's Day recess this week. Not that they would have been doing anything this week anyway because of the snow. But, yeah, so I flew here on Virgin America Airways. Can I tell you how cool this plane was? First of all, you know, Virgin Atlantic has been operating for years. And I've never flown them. You've been to England. Have you ever flown Virgin?
Yes, the best.
It's awesome. So
fantastic.
So I had every reason to believe Virgin America would be good, and it was. First of all, the plane's brand new, which is nice. As someone on Twitter said, I love them because it's got that new plane smell. Anyway, but see, I was tweeting from the plane because, yes, they have, you can get Wi-Fi, you can get internet on the plane.
For a price.
It was $12.95. But let me tell you, I mean, I probably shouldn't have done it because then maybe I would have slept. But I didn't sleep much because I was online, I was listening to music. They had a whole, like, music library, and you can go on, you have your little screen in front of your seat, and you can pick and choose what songs you want to hear and create your own playlist. So I created a playlist with Ryan Adams, Frank Zappa, Radiohead. I mean, it was a very eclectic playlist that probably went for an hour or so while I'm surfing the web from my seat on the airplane. So I'll tell you, that is not an easy flight from Fort Lauderdale to Los Angeles. It's long. It flew by, yeah. And I didn't even sleep. And I was watching, you know, they have the TVs, so, you know, I watched a little bit of Morning Joe, which I don't know why I do it, because Joe Scarborough it gets more and more partisan Republican every day. He's really annoying. But anyway, the news broke this morning that Evan Bayh, senator from Indiana, has decided he's not going to run for re-election. You know, what a piece of crap this guy is, because there are 4 days left to file. So no Democrat was going to challenge him. So now any Democrat who wants to run for office has 4 days, now 3 days, yeah, to get their paperwork in. You know, he could have given them a heads up, and he didn't give Harry Reid any advance knowledge of this, Obama, nobody. And then I'm watching Andrea Mitchell comes on, and she said, and I usually like Andrea Mitchell, but she goes, this was the tease leading up to the story, one of the rising stars in the Democratic Party calls it quits. And I'm thinking,
Who could it be?
Is it somebody else? And then she comes back on with the story about Evan Bayh. I'm like, Evan Bayh, rising star? No, maybe a rising star in the DLC. Certainly not the Democratic Party. Anyway, it looks like the Democrats are going to lose that seat as well. And they have Evan Bayh to thank for it. Yeah, not good.
No,
not
tipping, good. Tipping badly.
Yes, and so there we are. I'm looking for some of the, Bayh is a jerk. Deliberately timed, Mr. Evans says. Or, yeah, rising star. That was my, you know, that was my reaction, too. I thought someone else. By the way, somebody in the chat room mentioned that the lighting in here is not, you know, it's kind of dark. We're in Amy's kitchen.
And I'm missing a bulb.
Oh, I guess that's why she's missing a bulb.
Missing a couple of bulbs.
This is not set up for broadcast. In my studio at home, you know, I have the lights strategically placed, but, you know, it's we're winging it here. So the fact that we're on at all is pretty surprising. but we made it on. All right, so we're going to jump all over the place here, obviously. So what do we got cooking here?
I've got some carrots and onions sweating in some butter.
Okay.
And I'm just going to throw in some chicken broth and a potato that I'm going to cut up.
Mm.
Throw in some salt and pepper and let it simmer for a while, and it'll be yummy.
So this it's a vegetable soup.
It's just
soup.
A soup. I like this one. It's a simple soup. You can make it more fun if you put in cream.
No, we don't want cream.
You puree it and all that. No, but this will be nice, you know, trying to teach a little healthy stuff.
Right.
And I also think that when you have that food around and available, you mm-hmm. know, then, you know, if you're hungry, that's what you'll eat.
And this is a good thing to do if the vegetables are starting to get a yeah. little old and, you know, you're not going to use them in a salad or
well,
something, so maybe make
fresh is best, but, yeah, right. instead of throwing it out, you know, I'm always thinking about food from the minute I wake up. What am I making for dinner? I ask my kids what you have for lunch, so we don't have chicken twice a day.
And, you see, and I know, I'll go, like...
I'm very domestic.
I go
actually.
Through the drive through, but I try not. I don't do McDonald's or anything, but I try to go like a Pollo Tropical, which is grilled chicken. You know, but right. but you know,
all right. I guess yeah.
Here it's like El Pollo Loco, but you know, it's the grilled chicken. It's not the you know the fried stuff.
You can go to 7-Eleven and get a yogurt and a banana.
She won't eat it.
She will if there's nothing else and she's hungry. See, this is where, this is my thing is, kids, hungry kids will eat what's in front of them. Mm. And I would almost rather have my kid not eat anything than eat something really bad.
Yeah.
So, I'm telling you, you don't give them choice.
Right.
We're done?
No.
Don't give them a choice. That's what I think. And especially before dinner, when everyone's, when they get home from school... Put out a healthy snack. If you have popcorn and potato chips, they'll yeah. eat that. But if you put out carrots and celery, they'll eat that.
Right. No, she likes carrots and celery.
It's really about choice.
Okay, so the lean cuisines are not good, huh?
Do you read it? Here's my thing. If you can't read it, you can't eat it.
Okay.
And if you read what's on the back of some of those things, oh, she looks so guilty. Yeah, well, this is a lesson then.
I know.
I mean, it's easier than you think. It actually does take planning and executing. You have to go shopping and buy the food.
Yeah,
but people, that's why people have whole careers. The Food Channel has taken off because we all really feel guilty that we're not eating properly.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't they have drive-through Whole Foods stuff?
Well, they should.
All the drive-throughs yeah. are cheap and accessible, and the good, healthy food is more expensive and harder to find.
Can I tell you, I had a great idea for a restaurant.
I'm listening while
okay.
I do this. Uh-huh.
It's called Concoctions, okay? Do you like it? Concoctions.
I like it already.
And it's sort of like, and now there are places that have sprung up like this. There's a place, you know, I live in South Florida. There's a place in Weston called Stir Crazy. And it's sort of like it is, but it was like my idea, but I'll walk you through it. All right. It's concoctions. And you go in, and first you pick your base. Your base could be a baked potato. It could be pasta. It could be rice. Of course, you can tell it's me because I love the starches,
and it's
right?
all white food.
I know. Well, you can get a sweet potato.
Okay, that's very good.
Right? Or brown rice. Okay, so those, you know, or you could just get a salad. You don't even have to have the base, okay?
All right. Okay, I'm with
then
you.
Then you choose your vegetables, okay? So it has all fresh vegetables. So it's sort of like a salad bar where you fill up a big bucket full of the vegetables
yeah,
you want.
That's great.
Then you choose your meat, if you want meat. Get meat, chicken, fish, it could be tofu, it could be beef, if you want, okay? Then you decide how you want it prepared. Steamed, stir-fried, you can even, I guess, bake it in a casserole if you want.
And they do it for you there.
And then you choose your sauces if you want a sauce. It could be as simple as, you know, teriyaki sauce or soy sauce, or it could mm-hmm. be like a honey mustard. You know, you choose.
That's better, but here's what I'm thinking.
Yes.
And I don't mean to be a party pooper, but the minute you say stir fry, I'm thinking what kind of oil.
Right.
Well, and when you say sauce, mm-hmm. I'm wondering what are the ingredients in these.
Okay, well, I want it all good, healthy stuff. But so you choose what you want. You pick the ingredients you want, so you make your own concoction. Because I used to make these concoctions when I lived in Manhattan Beach, before I had a kid and before... You know, when I worked mornings and then I had the afternoon free and I would play because, you know, I don't follow recipes, but they were always good. Mm-hmm. You know, you could do balsamic vinegar on whatever. But I always thought a restaurant like that would be a great idea.
Yeah. And how's it doing? You don't know? When you go in there, is it crowded?
I would think so. It doesn't exist anywhere. Well,
this is what's in your mind.
This is my idea. Oh, this is my place, Concoctions. Now, there's a place in Florida not far from me called Stir Crazy. that's all stir-fried, that is an Asian restaurant. I mean, they have...
See, now what you're talking about, they sort of do that already a little bit at like a soup plantation.
Uh-huh. But no, they don't cook it for you.
Right.
That's just a salad bar. And they have soups, and they have pastas, and they have baked potatoes.
Right. That's a great idea.
All right. Amy, that's my daughter Allison calling, because you hear the Allison song. So you talk for a little bit. And
I'll be right back. You carry on.
Okay. This is Amy Simon standing in for Nicole Sandler while she answers the phone, doing mommy duty. She's left her daughter with Charles Manson. No. She's left her with a babysitter. And actually, when she got here, she was telling me how her daughter didn't want her to go because we all want our mommies. And when she opened up her suitcase here, there was a really cute little Valentine's note stuck in her suitcase. And it made Nicole so happy because she realized her child actually loves her and misses her. Mommy's work is never done, so, yeah. So, anyway, I'm going to be cooking some healthy stuff for Nicole today because she's challenged, as she said, domestic challenge, and she doesn't eat as healthily as I would like her to eat. So I'm being her Jewish mommy a little bit today, and I'm going to make her a whole bunch of vegetables and get her all healthy while she's here in Los Angeles doing the L.A. thing.
Okay.
How's it going? I told them so many secrets about you. You wouldn't believe. Oh, God.
Well, you know, I'm away from home, so I had to take Allison's
phone call.
I told
them about the Valentine in your suitcase.
Oh, wasn't that sweet? She gave me a hug. She left me a coupon for a hug. She's tugging at those whole heartstrings, you know.
You had to do it.
All right. So we figured we would do the cooking thing while we're talking.
And by the way, I heard there was this meat recall, beef recall.
Yeah.
Yesterday on the news, it was a smaller one, and then they said it was bigger. I didn't really watch too much news today, but we watched a little bit. I didn't hear anything about it. But I have to tell you, I am very nervous to eat meat in general. After all those movies that... What was that last
one?
Well,
Food Inc., which is nominated for Best Documentary. You know, Capitalism, A Love Story did not get nominated. But Food Inc. and The Cove did, and those are two... I had the directors of both those films on the show.
Mm-hmm. I can never look at meat the same way again.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty nasty. And I don't eat red meat very often. Very, very rare. Although, you know, I'm here in California, so I'm going to have to do the In-N-Out burger thing. Those are good.
Well, they do say that that's one of the healthier ones.
Yeah, they
never
use
had
all
it.
Oh, my goodness.
I've never had... I don't do fast food.
Oh, my God. Well,
I will, in your honor.
Maybe I'll have to take you to In-N-Out Burger.
I don't think I can do it.
You can get it protein style.
I wouldn't do it without, you know, it's like eating soy ice cream.
You get it protein style. And
what does that mean?
They put it in an envelope of lettuce.
No,
so
the whole
the
best
bread.
Part is the bun with the smother
and
ketchup
good.
And the... I mean, I love that stuff. I'm an American, but after, you know, sometimes ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. I know, because you might get addicted. But seriously, I mean, anytime there's any kind of, survey on the best burgers in America, In-N-Out Burger, I'm going to just tilt this down, In-N-Out Burger always, you know, is up there as among the best, and they are good. So, but if you don't want to do it, that's all right, because when David lands, I'm telling you, he's just going to want to go to In-N-Out Burger. And he, you know... Allison hates going to his house because there's never any kid-friendly food there.
What kind of food does he have?
He eats very healthy. He's a health nut.
You should go there more often.
I know.
What does she mean? Is not kid-friendly. What is kid-friendly?
Well, you know,
French fries.
Yeah, you know.
This is my thing. I just can't.
But I'm getting her the sweet potato fries that you can make in the oven.
That's good.
That aren't fried.
That's fantastic.
Okay.
And, you know, when you go to a restaurant and they bring you bread in a basket, it's like the worst thing.
I know.
Ask for vegetables. Why can't they put carrots and celery and jicama, which I'm going to make in a minute. Do you know jicama?
Yeah, I've had jicama here, I believe.
Have you had jicama here? All right. Not a fan of jicama?
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
It's good if you drench it in blue cheese.
Oh, I bet.
I don't have any blue cheese.
That's okay.
Anyway.
So, let's do a little bit of talk about some of the first ladies in our time. Because Amy has been working on this new show called She's History, The Most Dangerous Women in America, Then and Now. And, you know, and you've heard her on the show with me before talking about the women in our, in our American history that are not written about in the history books. I mean, kids in school do not learn about any of the four mothers.
Right.
They only learn about the four fathers. And if the people of Texas have their way, that's all going to be changed too. And you won't be learning about the four fathers either. You'll be learning about Ronald Reagan more. They want to read all the textbooks come from Texas. And they are trying to change the curriculum, the history curriculum, and totally erase the whole labor movement from our history books and talk more about, you know, like Ronald Reagan and his impact on America.
I didn't know this.
Oh yeah, this is all going on.
Well,
you would never know that the Democrats control both houses of Congress and the White House the way the Republicans still run this country.
I'm getting depressed.
Yeah. Well, you know, Neil Bush is big in the textbook field. In fact, the Florida standardized testing is the FCATs. And, you know, Jeb Bush was our governor in Florida. And they're responsible for the curriculum in the Florida schools. And that's why they're so lousy.
And I heard you talking to Randy Rhodes last week.
Yeah.
And she was praising the education. Wasn't
no,
she?
No, she was not. She was saying the education in Florida was so horrible.
Was.
And her niece, Jessica, was raised
right.
in Florida.
Right.
And,
But I heard you say something about a model that now is a great model. I thought I heard her talking.
Not Florida.
Maybe another state that she was talking about.
Maybe. Well, but, you know, that her daughter, now her niece, who was raised as her daughter after her sister died, the stuff she should have learned in high school, she was finally learning in college.
You know, I know I'm kind of veering off a little, but if we're
That's
talking
okay.
about education, I live here in Beverly Hills.
Yes.
And the reason I live here is I moved here is because of the schools, because the LA Unified School District has a lot of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also budget cuts all over the place.
Right.
But Beverly Hills is a public school. It's called the Beverly Hills Public it's a public school, but
it's its own city.
And it is amazing. And all this time you usually have to live here in order to go to school here, but they had something called a permit where you could go to school here without living here on a special permit.
Hmm.
And it was based on government money, state money rather, that the state would contribute, and forgive me if I don't have it all correct, but every time an out-of-city student went to school here, the school got money for that student because
right.
it came from the state.
Sure.
But what they just did was they realized that the property taxes here are so high that they are going to take a portion of the property tax of people who live here, take a portion of their property tax to put into the education fund and say no thank you to the state and no thank you to the kids that are not here.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a terrible, long, all year long debate because all these kids that live out of Beverly Hills that had been going here were sort of promised that they could always go through.
Right, they could finish
and
their
now they
school
can't.
Career. Ooh.
And there's a big problem about it because if your grandparents went here, you can go on legacy because the grandparents are still living here and they're still paying property tax.
Right.
But people are flipping out because, you know, my kids have gone through school here and my youngest is going into eighth grade next year. So if I didn't live in Beverly Hills but I'd been going here on a special permit, she would be able to finish eighth grade. But then she'd have to go somewhere else
for ninth grade.
There are thousands of kids. Hmm. I don't have thousands, hundreds of
mm-hmm.
kids that thought they'd be going through all the way because the schools are so good. My kids are getting the most amazing education here. College level stuff in high school.
So it's worth the extra money you pay to live here for the education, because otherwise you might have to pay for a private school, in which case
and there are good public schools, but now it's a little late to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting debate because the families that live here, like me, I'm paying property tax so my kids can go to school here, and I'm paying for other kids to go to school here.
Right, which you don't want to do.
Well, and that's an interesting thing, because my view is, you know, I think we're all, I'm such a socialist at heart, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, I think we're all in one big soup pot.
Well, it's true, and that's the thing. I mean, there's an argument
that
a lot of people make that why should they have to pay, people
right.
who don't have kids, don't want kids, never wanted kids, don't have kids, why should they have to pay property taxes To education, but as it's part of the commons.
Yeah, they're the ones that are going to take care of you.
Exactly. You know? These are the people who are going to grow up to be the doctors and the lawyers and the you know, hopefully the politicians. And, you know, we contribute to the society. That is the commons. That's why we have the commons. That's why we have government. And we all chip in for the education of our children.
Yeah.
Even if they're not our own children.
But I understand both sides. That's why it's such a debate, because, you know, there are parents that think, you know what, I'm going to make the sacrifice. And they did a side-by-side, a couple of families in the local paper, saying that this family, they sold their house and moved into a little apartment so that their children could be absolutely guaranteed of a Beverly Hills education.
Mm-hmm.
So they made that sacrifice, where another family lives outside of Beverly Hills and was told, you'll probably be able to go through. So they live in a nice house. And, you know, mm-hmm. So you see how it's a debate.
Right.
And it's a really interesting one. But it just shows you the terrible state of our education.
I agree.
That we have to be traumatized. I mean, these kids, there's a lot of trauma going on around here, because these kids now don't know where they're going to school. And they
wow.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah. And there's a big difference from one school to the next. And not only here in California, in Florida. I mean, Allison this year they did the redistricting, and there was a new school that just opened, and she got sent to this new school, which is great. But there's a little girl who's one of her best friends who lived across the street from the school. And we had this huge flood a few weeks ago. Go figure. There's no climate change. What are you kidding? We had this massive flood, and the whole school area flooded out, and her friend's apartment completely flooded out. And they lived in this apartment so that she would be by the school, so that the kids could go to the school.
Mm-hmm.
They got flooded out of the apartment. They had to move. They wound up moving, I want to say, 8 blocks north, but I'm just in the northern tip of Dade County, so they are now in Broward County, and the mother is freaking out.
Oh,
she said, and she's got 4 kids.
Oh,
she said,
God.
They're finally doing great in the school. There's good teachers, and I don't know what to do. I mean, if it were me, I'd lie. I'd use somebody else's address. But, that's me. And I asked her what she's going to do. She said, I'm just going to go talk to them. And I'm thinking, wait till the school year is over at least, and give yourself time.
Very
so maybe
risky.
Over the summer you can find another apartment back in the district again.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't care.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I could do that. I mean, I, of course, I'm thinking I could, it would make more economic, much more financial sense for me to move out of this expensive area that I'm living in,
mm-hmm.
while I'm transitioning into a career. But I don't want to. I'm making that sacrifice too. I'm making a big financial sacrifice so my kids can get the education, because I think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lucretia Mott, back in the day.
Okay.
Lucretia Mott, Quaker, born in 1817 something, when women couldn't get educated. I mean, they couldn't. They weren't even allowed to go to school. The whole education history of allowing women to go to school. And she wrote, I think it was called Discourse on Women, a famous book, where she chalked it all up to education. And she said, there's no point in giving women the right to vote unless they have education so that they're informed.
Mm-hmm.
Frances Wright said it, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, there was the big suffrage movement was going on at the same time that we were fighting just for the right to be educated.
Right.
And I think about someone like Belva Lockwood, who nobody knows. Maybe somebody out there knows who she is. From listening to me, well. And she was more known to be the first woman to practice in front of the Supreme Court. And I just love her story. It's so personal to me, because she was married and she was a teacher and she was fine. She had a baby and her husband died. And this is like the same thing that Leslie Bennett says, that, you can't depend on anybody but yourself. And they all said it. All the great women said it. Husband dies. Uh-oh. She's got to make a living. So she wants to go back to school, but she can't take care of a child and go to school at the same time. Hello, I'm trying to do that.
Hello.
She leaves her child with her mother, luckily.
Mm-hmm.
And for 3 years, she goes off and she goes to college. But first, they wouldn't even let her into college. She had a fight just to get into college. I can't remember right now the name. I think it was National University. And I think she had to get, like, Ulysses S. Grant, who was an alma mater there, to get her allowed to go in. So she finally goes and she gets a degree, and now she wants to go to law school. I think it was law school that they wouldn't let her in. Yes, they wouldn't let her into law school because women were distracting. She had gone to, I think, an all-female seminary and gotten a degree. She finally fights like the Dickens and she gets into law school. She graduates, but they won't give her the certificate. because she's a woman. So she has to fight one battle after. So and she gets her child back, and you know, she's now a working mom, and this is in the 1800s. This is like 1870 something. She gets her degree. Now she's a lawyer. Yay! And she gets her first case in front of the Supreme Court.
Wow.
Guess what?
They won't let her
take your ovaries and hit the road, Jack. You know, they would not let her practice. She fought like crazy, and she finally. And if you Google right now, Belva Lockwood, it'll come up, first woman to, but she ran for president.
To argue in front of the Supreme
Court.
First woman.
And then a year after that, a gentleman named, I think his name was Sam Lowry, a black man, had the same thing. He fought like the Dickens to get a law degree, and then he got a case in front of the Supreme Court, and they said, no, you're black, you can't. And Belva Lockwood, she fought for him, and she broke down that door for him.
Wow!
So I love her. But even the story of Elizabeth Blackwell, I think we talked about this maybe on your last one of your shows. She was the first doctor in America, and she comes from a very interesting family of accomplished women. She couldn't go to school either; they wouldn't let her into school. So the way she ended up getting going to medical school, she was the first woman in America to get a medical degree. There was a school she applied to, them all, Harvard, you know, all of them. They said nope. A school in upstate New York, and upstate New York was just a hotbed of great things for women. They did a joke. Like, they said, hey, there's this girl, and she wants to come to school here. Should we let her? And they're like, yeah, okay. let her in. And they didn't realize that it was real. And then she shows up. And they were not nice to her. And, you know, I have some great letters that she wrote, that we have, that she wrote to her family and friends saying, oh, you know, basically today's, you know, they're just shutting me out. But, and she won everybody over. But what courage that took to go to an all-male school and put up with but she won them over. And she ended up just, you know, you Google Elizabeth Blackwell, and she had the first birth control clinics, but she set up clinics for women. And, you know, she was the first doctor. She went over to England. She learned their stuff. She came back here. Unbelievable.
What year was that?
1800s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. See, and these women, we don't read about them in the history books. We don't hear about them. We're not taught them. And you actually went, where did you go to talk to dean of women's studies?
Yeah, I want to get a degree in women's history.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to investigate. And this is just locally in California. And I found there's a lot of women's history courses, but there are no women's history programs. There's women's studies, women's gender, just like there's African-American studies, there's Latina studies, there's Asian studies. But for me, I'm pissed off that these women's stories, the history of the women. So I went to a few universities, and a few said, yeah, you know, we should have that. And I went to a very...
We should have that,
yeah. But no, women that run the women's gender, women's studies department said, yes, we're trying to get more women's history. So just a few weeks ago, I went to a very esteemed college here, university here. There's a difference between a college and a university.
Yes.
And I sat and talked with somebody, and she said, well, there's lots of women's history courses. I said, yeah, but there's no women's history program. I want to teach a class on all the women who ran for president, or, you know, this kind of stuff. And there, you can learn it, they're saying, but it's sort of mixed in with everything. And they were very complacent about it. Like, you know, we don't think... there's lots of women's history being taught, but it's in with everything else. And I was like, but they're getting short shrifted. Why don't... And so then I sat with, like, a real hot shot. And she said, and I said the same thing. I said, I want to get a degree in women's history, and there are no women's history programs. Oh, it's being taught. I said, no, it's not being taught. It's being taught in college. I said, that's great. It's not being taught to my daughters who are young, and they come home from school for Women's History Month, and they want to do their book report on Cher. And I was getting all mad at her. And she was getting all mad at me. She's like, well, they're being taught. I said, no, they're not. She goes, well, what, are you going to make a career out of it? I said, yes, I want to make a career. This is what I'm doing here. I want to make a career out of teaching women's history or letting our children learn. You know,
about these women who came before. So your daughter, Rose, is in 11th grade. And have you looked through her history books?
Uh-huh.
And see
well, now that she's in 11th grade, she's better in high school. Mm-hmm. It's either lower grades or... Although last year I was working in a middle school, and the Declaration of Sentiments was being taught, which is what they came up with at the Seneca Falls Convention. And that was really encouraging to me. It's being taught, but, you know, nothing like what it should be. One-eighth of what they should be learning.
Amy Simon is here with us. We're actually in Amy Simon's kitchen in Beverly Hills, California, and doing a little cooking, which, by the way, that is smelling delicious.
Here's the trick, though, and I used to do this when I was young and single and I wanted to seduce my boyfriends. just saute a little butter in onions, mm-hmm. and they're, or bake some cupcakes. And, mm-hmm. you know, the smell of scent, the, mm-hmm. The sense of scent. All right, but now I'm going to make you some salsa. Okay,
and the guacamole.
You want guacamole?
Yeah, that's what you're making there,
well,
isn't it?
Well, here's the thing. I could make guacamole, and I will.
You're cutting up the avocado.
I want to make you a salsa because there's more vegetables in a salsa.
Okay, so...
But I'll make you guacamole also if you want. I have enough. Guacamole is really mushed up avocados.
Right.
And depending on what you want to put in it, there's just some seasoning. Or actually, you know, you could throw some sour cream, some garlic.
No, I don't like sour cream, and I don't like cilantro.
Okay, I won't put any in here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm picky.
That's okay. Yeah. There's no
but
shame.
So you, if you said salsa, but you put avocado in salsa?
I do.
Really?
Well, I'm. You know, it's all very loose. You know, you can
see. But the other thing is, I don't like raw onions.
I won't put any in.
Okay.
For you, I won't.
Then make me a salsa with avocado
and tomatoes and some lime juice.
Okay.
And some.
Mango? You put mango in?
It is so yummy.
Yum.
A little bit of sugar. And this is a great thing to also put on fish.
Uh-huh.
So you get, because fish can be bland.
Yes.
And I don't like to cook it on the stove because mm-hmm. I don't like to cook it in oil, even though everything tastes better if you cook it in oil.
Right, but it's not, you know,
it's not
very healthy, right.
And it makes your house smell too. So you take a nice piece of fish and mm-hmm. you grill it or you bake it.
Right.
And it's a little bit, and then you put this on it and you're in heaven. And it's like so healthy and satisfying and yummy. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
All right.
See, look at this. We're getting a little bit of it.
And I'm going to go out to my garden.
And Stu Tweedy, who is watching and listening to us from London, he's saying garlic.
Yes.
Salsa, some tomatoes, onions, chili, pinch of sugar,
thanks,
garlic. So. Yes,
oh stew. My, how could I forget garlic?
Garlic.
That's sinful.
Yeah. Yes, hello. Garlic.
How could I forget? And in my garden out there, I have, well, green onions, but you don't like them. You don't like any onion?
I don't like raw onions. No.
Okay, no. I'm going to bring in a few things. You can take a bite. I won't put it in.
Okay.
I won't make you do anything.
Amy has fresh arugula
in my garden.
In her garden.
And
that is the most pungent. I mean,
really spicy.
It very spicy arugula.
I got a spicy one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also have broccoli and cauliflower growing
you do?
Up. I do.
Wow.
That's why I love LA. I'm a New York girl, and I'm growing living off the land. But I have some parsley out there too, and a few other herbs that make it all nice. But we'll taste as we go. Okay.
Okay. All right. So we're talking history. We're talking, women's history. And it is President's Day. So who is your favorite First Lady other than Michelle? You know, I'm still really loving Michelle Obama, and there are days I want to say how much better off maybe we'd be if she were president.
Yeah.
Because she seems to not take any crap from anybody, and she pretty much says it the way it is. I mean, I'd love to hear her, you know, just sit and drink a bottle of wine with her one day, and
okay.
Why is David calling?
I'll talk about, let's see.
He knows we're on the air.
One of my favorite first ladies, Abigail Adams, of course. Okay. I mean, she was... if anybody saw the HBO special, I think everybody who did knows what a big part she played in our history. But she was a true partner.
David, hold on.
He's going to yell at me?
No, David wants to know if we're going to make sweaty balls.
Oh, he'd love me to make... No, I'm not even going to
go
there.
We're just doing the salsa thing.
Yeah.
You enjoying it? Okay. Okay. Bye.
Sweaty balls.
Yeah, I don't have the phone hooked up. I sort of do, but the way that our studio is situated, it's not very easy for me to take calls at the moment.
Abigail Adams, you know, when I say that she and John, they had a beautiful partnership, and they were separated for 10 years.
Yes.
And it wasn't because they were having marriage problems.
No.
It was because he was off at the Continental Congress.
Right.
And she wasn't home, you know, just sitting around with Betsy Ross sewing flags and gossiping.
Eating bonbons and watching soap operas.
Yeah, or gossiping about Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson, which
ooh.
Is what I'd be doing,
ooh,
you know.
Yeah.
But she was running the family farm, raising five kids. She had help.
Dealing with illness and smallpox.
See, and here's the thing about all those women in the colonial time. They had so much equality in terms of really being partners in running the, everyone had a farm or a mm-hmm. business. They were never idle. I mean, they weren't, but they still didn't have rights. They had no say in the government. And this is what she said, you know, we have those 2,000 letters. I have half of them right here, right in that book right there.
Ooh.
Ooh, I know. Don't get me going with the books, but.
Wait, see, I just got to show you what Amy's got in the kitchen. American Women Activists Writings. See, she's really, you know, she's into this stuff.
I'm so into it. When I read it, it just puts a fire in my belly. And she's, you know, writing him while he's there. She's 2,000 letters, which is so wonderful to have a real diary. You know, we really know what life was like then.
Right.
She talks about one of her letters that, and she's like, well, you know, something came along, some illness. I had a puke, and I feel better. And that's the way, you know, it's very, the language, of course, mm-hmm. is very interesting. But one of her most famous letters is the Remember the Ladies letter, where she says, remember the ladies and be more generous and kind to them than your forefathers or your ancestors. Do not put so much power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if we let them. And he just laughed her off. She's like, please put a woman's rights planks in the desk. She basically flat out said, please give us the right to vote. And I'm thinking she's sleeping with the guy. I mean, she's in bed with the guy. Mm-hmm. She has no power. You know, still no power. And she
says, Estrada. I'm telling you.
I know, you told me, we had this chat once before, but she's like, we will foment we need to have a voice in the government, we'll foment a revolution. And he's like, just be quiet. And, you know, and she writes all these letters to Mercy.
You see, because he was a Republican. And it's true. And if she were around today, you know, I think Abigail Adams would be a Democrat. She would be a progressive Democrat, and she would be running for office herself.
She was really something, and even when she got into office, I believe I don't think the White House was built then.
No, in fact, they moved into the White House, and it was still being built while he was president.
And she
I'm not as well read as Amy is, but I watched the John Adams miniseries,
right.
And that's how I know this stuff.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry, my religious training comes from watching the Ten Commandments on TV.
Everything I learned from Oprah. So I learned more from Oprah and the West Wing than I learned in school.
Mm-hmm.
So, and plus, I'm a library girl. I like to read. And that's the great thing about history, and the most exasperating thing about history is you can't change history. Like, everything that happened is
although
there.
Although Dick Cheney would like to.
he would.
Because he's constantly trying to rewrite it. But no, you can't, because and the Republicans do. They're. I sound like such a partisan hack, and I'm really not, because I'm not a big fan of the Democrats these days either. It's just, you know, it's the lesser of two evils right now. But I'm sorry.
That's
continue.
Okay. I don't even remember. We were probably just talking about the history in
the
books. So, yeah, I mean, I never run out of stuff. And the internet is a terrific supplement. And, of course, I have two kids in school, and they want to do all their reports through the internet, and they actually get their the papers coming home saying what they need, the criteria for their reports, and now that you must go to the books. The teachers are telling them you have to have 4 sources or whatever it is, because kids are just going on the internet, Wikipedia, you know.
Well, in Allison's case, she's not allowed to use Wikipedia, which is good. That's one of the rules, no Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to get the books, but they can get references from books from the internet, but she's still only in fifth grade.
There's fantastic stuff, though. I mean, because I'm a new historian, and I spend so much time researching, and, you know, one door leads to another. And you can find things online, actual letters. I find beautiful images of plaques. Like, there was a woman named Deborah Moody in New York who was a Quaker, and she went and she was one of the first women, I can't remember now, to start her own settlement or something. And there's actually a plaque in Brooklyn with her, like a stone with her. My cousin, I was talking to my cousin in Brooklyn, I'm like, hey, did you ever hear? She goes, oh yeah, I know exactly where it is. I'm like, oh, you got to take me there and see it. So, and I learned that from the internet. So it does make it easier to find stuff out, and I do love it, but there's nothing like a book.
Well, you know, the thing is that most books have not yet been digitized, and there are so many books that never will be digitized. So the only way to get them is to actually go into a library or go into an old bookstore, you know, and you got, you know, the problem is that the biggest libraries, you know, you need to go to New York City to get some of these old books, or here in L.A.
You know, our friend Heather Chase, who is amazing. She's a wealth of information.
She's the one who did my website.
And she knows more than I do, and she's much younger than I. She was telling me that there's a lot of terrific stuff that I'm looking for. I think it's Elizabeth Cady Stanton's stuff, or maybe it's Victoria Woodhull's letters, and they're in like the Schlesinger Library, or they're in some college library, and it's a little bit challenging for her apparently to get stuff released. They're in the college. What was that sound?
I don't know.
It was weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, the colleges and the universities. I mean, I'd love to take a tour and just go around to these, to Harvard and Yale and all these that have this. Schlesinger, especially for some reason, has a lot of women's history stuff, and a lot of it happened in New York State. Tons of it happened in New York State.
Oh, right.
And I grew up there, but I didn't have this passion then. And it's like so ironic that I lived there my whole life and I didn't take advantage.
So you've got two daughters. One is going into one is in eighth grade and one is in 11th.
Seventh grade.
Oh, she's still in
Ruby's
seventh grade.
In
okay.
Seventh, yeah.
So in seventh and 11th grades, what do they think about your obsession with women's history?
Well, at first they just were really sick of it, but they're actually very proud of me now. It took a while for them, because when they're that age, you know, all you have to do is breathe in front of a teenager and you embarrass them.
Exactly.
Mom, you're embarrassing me. Stop breathing, please. But my daughter Rose, in 11th grade, they're doing American history. So she's doing a lot of this. No, I know this because of my mom. And actually there was... They do learn, but still not half enough when I looked in the book. But they take turns, or they each get to choose a subject. So she wanted to do women's history, and another girl wanted to do women's history. And they flipped a coin, and Rose lost.
Oh.
She was very upset. She came home. She goes, Mom, I can't
but
do it.
But only one kid gets to do women's history out of the whole history class.
There's a lot of history, and, you know, they don't teach geography either, so they actually have to combine. It's social studies, but
right.
It's actually called U.S. history, I believe, the course. Yes, they all take different sections, so it's not like, I don't know how they figure it out.
Okay.
But it's not like only one person can do it, but there are, like, 15 different subjects, and each kid gets to pick one, and so if two kids want the same one, they have to choose. So she lost. So the day that the other girl did it, she came home, and first of all, the other part was that when I do my Fabulous Female Facts, you know, I write Fabulous Female Facts. Everyone should check out the museumofmotherhood.org. It's awesome, and I write these monthly facts for them, and I wrote one on Lucy Stone, who was a suffragette and, a pioneer, and she was one of the first women in America to keep her name. When she got married, she changed all the vows, and you can read. I found that online as well. You can actually go online and read the vows that she and her husband changed. So I say I'm a Lucy Stoner, because when I got married, I never changed my name.
Uh-huh.
But her name is Lucy Stone, but I make the joke because I want people to remember stuff. So I said, I'm a Lucy Stoner.
Uh-huh.
So in her history class, every time it came up, she'd raise her hand and she'd start talking about Lucy Stoner. And her teacher would keep saying to her, no, it's Lucy Stone. Anyway, the girl that did the report, first she called... Who did she call the wrong name? And we were laughing because Rose had us... she goes, yeah, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Or she didn't even get her name right. I think... Oh, she said Elizabeth Cody Stanton.
Ooh.
So Rose is like, it's Cady. She goes, yeah, she had this, you know, this friend named Susan B. Anthony. And, you know, and she's like, no, she wasn't a friend. She was her partner. And she was... And the teacher's like, shh, Rose, you know. So Rose came home and she'd be like, Mom, I aced my test because I knew about... So... You asked me at the beginning of this if they're proud of me. I think I was embarrassing for a little while, but I think now they are proud of me.
Good. I'm sure they are.
And it helps them in their school.
Right. Good. Yeah. And they realize, you know, almost through osmosis they're learning, and it's cool stuff they're learning about.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me about, and we were just looking for a video for your show that you're putting together, of when Nancy Pelosi was sworn in as the first female Speaker of the House, and you started getting all teary.
I know, I'm such a wuss.
But I remember you telling me, you called the girls in and made them watch, and...
They didn't care.
No.
You know, yeah, there she is. I'm like, girls, it's history. It's history. And my daughter's like, that's nice, Mommy. Do you have a headband? I'm like, oh. But they'll get it. They'll get it later. They will.
Yeah. All right, so where are we now? We're chopping the garlic.
Who is the gentleman from England?
Stu Tweedy.
Stu? I got more garlic going here than you want to know about. So, yeah, now I'm adding the garlic. And this is the kind of thing that you both, if you're with a guy or somebody that you want to be with, you both have to eat this because there's a lot of garlic in here.
Yeah, and just to the people in the chat room, when I see the trolls, I'm kicking them out. So, you know, as I see them, I get rid of them.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Trolls. Oh, in the chat room, there's some people who just happen upon the show.
Oh, okay.
And they post, you know, nasty stuff, and I get rid of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, no, Stu Tweedy called in the other day. from London, and we had a wonderful conversation. And so he's joining us.
By the way,
there.
Garlic raw,
yes,
is a natural infection fighter.
Yes, I know that.
So. Okay.
I do know that.
And now, onion, too. Raw onion, too.
Yeah, but I don't like raw, you know, onions. Now, what about, like, roasted garlic?
Yeah, I never roasted a garlic. I know it's Sudi B's favorite thing in the world.
It's so good.
Yeah, I don't know why. I know I've eaten it many times, but I've actually never roasted a garlic.
There's a restaurant
Although I
here.
Have in my chicken. So when I roast a chicken, I sit it on loads of garlic.
Ooh.
So I do have roasted garlic.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Oh, I like
it. Do you want
that.
Me to make you a roast chicken while you're here? I will.
David's probably going, what about me? I'll be there tomorrow.
I'll make you roast chicken if you want.
There's a wonderful restaurant that's not very far from here called the Stinking Rose.
Yeah.
That is a garlic restaurant that they have. I mean, everything is garlic. You walk in there and, you know, you walk out just smelling of garlic. But garlic mashed potatoes. I went there one year for Thanksgiving, and it was garlic turkey. I mean, garlic everything. Mm, so good.
Here are my heirloom tomatoes.
Heirloom tomatoes?
Yeah.
Okay, now you've got... See, to me, it looks like some tomatoes that are not ripe.
They're yellow. Can we show?
Yeah, here, bring it up. Bring it up here. So, now, what makes these heirloom tomatoes?
They're different seeds, and they're just different flavors, and they're very yummy. So.
Okay. All right.
So, I'm going to have some of those right
now. Oh, Douglas says he thinks the original Stinking Rose is in San Francisco.
Maybe.
I don't know about that. I think it's right there on La Cienega.
Maybe the original one.
Could be. All right. So, again, while you're out there, and the soup is coming along.
I'm putting a little sugar in because my Aunt Pearl, she told me anything you put, a little sugar. So.
Oh, okay. A little bit of sugar. And Amy doesn't believe in any of the fake sugar.
Fake nothing.
I like the Splenda, but she says,
I don't know what that is. Everyone says it's sugar, and I say, then how come on the envelope it doesn't say sugar? It says dextrose, and I don't know if that is actual, I don't know. I don't trust anything anymore.
I know. Well, and for good reason.
When it comes to food,
Well,
the closer to its natural state as you can be. That's what I've learned.
Okay. All right. So now, so far in this salsa, we have avocado and garlic, raw garlic, and now you're chopping up the tomatoes. You don't use any kind of like a food processor or anything.
You know what? The thing about these tomatoes, they'll get mushy.
Oh, yeah.
I do have a chopper. I chop my onion in a chopper.
Oh, that's right.
And I have a food processor. I don't know. I just think, because I think that there's probably a product out there that I don't know about.
or two. Probably, yeah.
So I don't know.
All right.
But I'm doing it this way.
Okay.
And I also thought it would be fun to do the show with you in the kitchen, because everything happens around the kitchen table.
Yes.
You know?
Now, you know what? I want you to talk about, because I still, every time I think about, like, cooking a big meal or something, I hear you talking about the puddings.
Oh, yeah.
So it's okay. Sort of like your soup is sort of like the puddings if you're
right.
Using all the vegetables that are sort of in the house.
Yeah, it came from Susan, from Elizabeth Cady Stan and Susan B. Anthony, who were partners. And Elizabeth...
Now, you say partners.
They
were business partners.
They weren't lovers.
Because in this day and age, when a woman talks about her female partner, because gays can't get married in so many places, so they talk about their partner, but they were business partners.
They were partners in the suffragette movement and in the women's equality movement.
Mm-hmm.
And they started out, like most women, in the abolition movement. That's where they met. And that's where the whole women's movement started, and the labor movement, and the temperance movement, and all of them. They all taught women how to organize, but it all started with abolition.
So they were like community organizers?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were. And they met, actually, after it got going a little bit. But when they did become partners, they lived near each other in upstate New York, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton had 7 kids, which pissed off Susan B. because... she couldn't count on her for everything.
Right.
She was always busy with the kids and the puddings. And the puddings were, from what I've gathered doing my research, they'd have a big pot, and this came from the 1700s and to the 1800s, they would have a big pot over the fireplace, and they would cook things in the pot. But they called it puddings, and then I read something where they would hang this, like, some kind of burlap or some kind of fabric, and inside the fabric they put the meats, and I think the meats would steam. So you'd have this pot,
right,
with the water and the vegetables or whatever was seasonal, whatever they, you know, run out and grab a jackrabbit or something. I don't know what they put in there. I really don't know.
The arugula from the garden.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And they would cook all that stuff, and I think it would steam. They would hang the meat over the pot, and it would steam, and they would, you know. So there's all this reference in all my books that I read about the puddings, and they called it pudding. That was called the puddings. And the famous line that is close to my heart is that Katie Stanton would write to Susan B. and say, look, and she'd say, where's the speeches? Because Elizabeth would write the speeches, and Susan would go off while Elizabeth's kids were young. Susan would go off and do the speeches, even though Elizabeth was a better speaker. And she'd say, Susan, you must come over and hold the baby and stir the pudding so I can ply the pen. Well. And I just love that. And I just love that because I get it. You know.
So I'm going to stir the puddings.
Oh, good, Nicole. You go stir the puddings. Yeah, and you can go take a taste of that in a little while. I haven't really seasoned it that much.
Okay, not yet. All right, so we're stirring the puddings. So I wonder if that's where... Now, what is it when you make roast beef and you have the fat coagulates with something in the pan and it's... It's pudding. It's, what is it? Yorkshire pudding.
Oh, I don't know. See, I'm not really a meat girl.
Oh,
so
right,
I know
right,
that
right.
much.
Well, that's what they call Yorkshire pudding, but it's not really pudding. It's like a bread.
There's something, though, the fried meat, and it just smells, there's something primal about
well,
it.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Well, it, yeah. I
now,
mean.
Isn't this pretty, Nicole? See all the pretty colors?
It is beautiful. Yeah. But you got green tomatoes and yellow tomatoes and red tomatoes.
Right.
Those are
and
heirloom tomatoes.
That's the other
tomatoes.
Thing. We eat too much white food.
Yes.
We need color. Color right. on the plate. Lots and lots of color. It's good. And it's pretty.
Yes.
Very pretty.
Yes. Well, it's pretty much anything that's white is bleached, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Except for, well, regular potatoes are not, that's not bleached.
No. And potatoes, yeah, they turn into sugar.
Yeah.
My boyfriend's actually on one of those diets right now where no processed food, no white food, and he's educating himself, and I'm happy to say, and learning all about, so potatoes are not on his diet. I don't know if sweet potatoes are. But and potatoes by themselves aren't bad. It's but what we do with them. We fry them. We mm-hmm. stick them in butter and all that good stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, but they taste so good.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm sorry that the good stuff is bad.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about some other okay. first ladies. Of course, there was famously, I'm trying to think in recent history, but you tend to do more with the
yeah,
founding
I like
mothers.
I like to talk about the women that nobody heard of, but we could talk right. about the letters released today from John F.
Let's
Kennedy.
Let's do this. I hadn't
oh
heard
God,
about this.
I did. And,
all right, now,
her name is Gunilla, a Swedish. I'm sure someone out there will know. They can find it online because they just I saw it on the news this morning that John F. Kennedy had an affair with a Swedish woman, and she has kept all the letters and telegrams. And it was a brief thing, and they never really could get
it. And it was before he married Jackie? Like they
and
were
during.
Together like and three
during.
3 weeks before he got married?
Something like
and,
that. Mm-hmm.
And
they're going on auction today.
They're auctioning off these letters, and she's
she
still
is.
Alive.
She is. Yeah, she's 79 years old, and she said, all right, I'll do it, I guess.
So, and here's my thing. I think that, I don't know, maybe it's a guy thing. Now,
I think it's a character thing.
And so what is it about men who go into politics? Is it a narcissistic thing? Is it a narcissism? It's an
power corrupts. You know, that's a theory
right.
that I
and so you got John Edwards, someone like John Edwards who is so narcissistic who you know would put the country in jeopardy.
Oh.
You know, and he had to have known, but this has gone on through history where men in power have always had affairs. I mean, men, period, have had affairs, but men in power, and we find it, and it's not party-centric. I mean, they do it on both sides of the aisle, and they always have.
Well,
but
maybe your friend in London, Stu
Tweedy.
Because this year there was that story about, I think it was actually Ireland.
Yeah.
There was a woman who was a leader in Ireland government, and she was having an affair.
Yes.
And it was a fascinating story.
And it was, what was it about her? It was her name or something
yeah.
about that story. I can't
right.
remember now
oh,
what it was.
Maybe somebody out there will. It was fascinating because she was doing the same thing that the men
and
would
do. She had a much younger boy toy.
And she used, she got him a job through her... Oh, gee, that's never been done before
right.
by any man.
But exactly, and it happens all the time with men, but mm-hmm. the fact that it was a woman who was doing this. Yeah, but, you know, I think women and men are built differently.
Yeah.
Where we are more naturally monogamous. Now, obviously, there are going to be exceptions on both sides. But it's amazing that we hear... Mrs. Robinson, that's what it was. Her name is Mrs.
Robinson.
Oh, yeah,
there you go.
Thank you, Paul. Yes, her name was Mrs. Robinson. How funny was that? And she had the boyfriend who was, you know, 20 or 30 years her junior.
And he wasn't her first, apparently.
Oh, really? Well, she was drummed out of Parliament.
But the boy, he was intimidated, and he made up stories that he was sick, so she'd leave him alone. I mean, she sounded like just a typical... John Edwards.
Yeah, but now there's the rumor that John Edwards has proposed to this woman.
Rielle Hunter?
Yes, and you know, now that he and Elizabeth are officially separated, but you know that, what a piece of work. But so back to JFK. Now we knew that he, you know, he was shtipping Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. We knew that he had other flings, but this woman, had we ever heard of her before? Or she just crawled out of the woodwork?
Just like people knew that John Edwards was doing, I'm sure people knew what he was doing, just like people knew what Tiger Woods was doing. You know, they all know they couldn't do it in a vacuum.
And they protect them. No, right. I mean,
enablers.
But was this woman ever in the, you know, it was never out in the open. No one ever heard of her before.
Right.
And now she's got all these letters.
She kept the secret all these years, and I guess she's 79, and she wants, I don't know what she wants.
I wonder if there's any man in power who, you know, is just monogamous.
I know one. I truly believe, you know, I'm in love with Barack Obama. I can't imagine if he or Bruce Springsteen turns out to...
We've heard that Bruce,
he
was named in a divorce. We don't know if it's true or not.
No, I won't believe it. And Barack Obama,
Well, if he ever, you know, if he screwed around on Michelle, then he's an idiot.
I think he's uncorruptible. I think he's already weathered Chicago in terms of personal. I'm talking, look at that face. I'm talking about his personal life. Like, he could never carry on.
I
don't burst my bubble, please.
I want to
put raw onion in your salsa.
I want to believe Nicole. Now, Michelle would kick the S out of him if he's straight. I believe that, too.
He wouldn't do it. My boyfriend's like that. He just doesn't have it in him.
Well, you know, and neither does David. I have no worries in that. I agree with you. And, yeah, I think Michelle and Barack really love each other. I mean, you can see it when they're together, where I never saw that chemistry between... between Bill and Hillary.
You know,
I never saw it between George and Laura, and certainly George Senior and Martha.
You know, it's funny about Bill and Hillary because we can all talk about why didn't she leave him and all that. But when I see them together, the three of them, I don't know. I could talk about that because, you know, to me, family. I wouldn't be happy with him riding in an elevator with my girls, but I would vote for him for president. So I know he's got a lot of issues like that, but their family is still together.
Yeah,
I don't know.
In some sense, I don't know. I think they must have some kind of arrangement.
But he was there. Of course they do. But he was there to support her.
Oh, yes.
And they're still together.
Here's the thing about Bill Clinton. As much as he did a lot of things to screw up this country. There are so many of his policies I disagree with. But I personally still like the guy. I would love to hang out with him because he seems like the kind of guy I'd like to hang out with. You know, I never understood the people who said they'd like to have a beer with George W. Bush.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's nobody I would ever want to talk to because I don't find anything intelligent about him. Nothing he says. He just is smarmy. There's just something really creepy about him.
More.
But Bill Clinton... I was so impressed with him that he could get up in front of a room and talk off the cuff and answer questions, and that's what I like about Obama also. And, you know, as disillusioned as I've been with him lately, when he got up those few Fridays ago and did the thing with the House Republicans, he won part of me back. Still not all of me. I'm not real happy with him, and especially with what's going on in Afghanistan this week.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, come on. It is time to get the hell out of there. We're killing innocent people now. And we've been, again, with the drones, but this time our targeted attacks are killing innocent people. we are, you know, making things worse rather than better. But in terms of personally, yeah, I think I'd like to hang out with Obama. Just look at who he brought in for the Kennedy Center honors, you know. His first Kennedy Center honors, he gives Bruce Springsteen, Robert De Niro, Mel Brooks.
He's just cool.
You know,
he's
really cool. And you could tell that he and Michelle were loving the music.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
And also he brought, didn't he do a statue of Sojourner Truth? Who you don't know who she, right? A lot of people don't. She was definitely a pioneer, a slave, and, you know, a freed woman, and she did a whole lot. Nobody knows who she is.
Mm-hmm.
We were just looking for that speech. I told
yes.
you about that Alice
right.
Walker.
Right, right, right.
Ain't I a Woman? Any historian or historian knows about Sojourner Truth, and they got a statue of her put in the White House finally, which is fantastic.
Right. No, there's a lot about him to be mm-hmm. proud of, to be happy with. Unfortunately, there's also a lot of bad, you know, bad policy there. And, you know, I say, let's get Rahm Emanuel the hell out of there, and maybe we can start turning things around. Now, Amy, I got to ask, you just poured a bunch of oil in there.
Olive oil.
And
this is really good for you if you don't heat it up.
If you don't heat it
mm-hmm.
up, okay.
Then you don't change the chemistry. It's not a,
it's good fats.
It's an unsaturated, yeah, olive oil. This is what the Mediterranean diet is
yes,
all about.
Right.
It's when you heat it up.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just pop out and get some parsley, and then I thought I would tell you
okay.
about, you know, maybe Eleanor Roosevelt
yes.
and Marian Anderson and the
okay.
Daughters of the Revolution.
Okay, cool. So Amy Simon is going out to her garden. She's going to pick some fresh parsley. Will you bring in just a little piece of broccoli and cauliflower, too, so we can see how they look from your garden? Oh, she's right outside the door. And it's not like she's got a big plot of land, either. I mean, she's pulling stuff out of little pots and right off the ground there. It's pretty amazing. Me, you know, I can you see? Black. I kill things. I can't even have a potted plant in my house because they die. I've kept my dogs alive and my kid, she's doing okay. She's growing like a weed. But I love Amy too. This, you know, she's one of my best buds and I learn from her. And so this is why we're doing the thing in the kitchen now, because she wants to teach me how to, you know, do some cooking and do the healthy stuff and talk about our foremothers. You gotta love the locavores. Yes. In fact, Joy, who's in the chat room, Hummingbird, introduced, okay, you're going to ask Amy to, you know what, I'll move, the thing is, I've been going for so many hours. I know we need more light on our faces, but we are, in the kitchen. Here, when Amy gets back here, I'll push the camera up a little bit, so they want to see you. It's just dark in here. Here, we'll push it in closer, okay? There
we
go. All right. Hopefully,
kitchen.
I didn't knock us off. All right. So, where were we?
Well, here's my cauliflower.
Oh.
But my broccoli hasn't.
Oh, they're tiny. They're little tiny
they're little
cauliflowers.
Babies. Yeah.
But are they edible at this place?
Yes, I don't know. Take a bite.
Really?
Hmm. You tell me.
Mmm.
Does it taste like cauliflower?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, really good.
Really good. I love that we can...
See, now you can't go back to store-bought. That's very yummy.
It is yummy.
All right,
I don't like cooked cauliflower. I like raw cauliflower.
Well, then eat that. Now, this is a green onion.
Uh-huh.
You don't like raw onion.
No.
Do you want to just take a little taste? You don't have to...
No.
Very fine. Here's my...
Uh-huh. Parsley. Parsley,
right. Bad breath, anybody? Parsley's great. How about a chive? Well, chive?
Chives are
onion. The onion family. She won't do the onion. Lemon.
That grew outside?
I have a whole tree. Take a whiff.
Lemon tree, very pretty. We don't know the rest of the words. And the lemon flower is sweet.
There you right? go. All right, so now I'm just going to...
I'm loving this cauliflower.
Yeah, you can have more.
Oh, that's good.
I'm having a great time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now what are you putting in there? Parsley?
Parsley.
Because you can't put cilantro on.
I don't even know if I have it growing out there. I can never tell. But I have some thyme and some... I don't quite know everything.
Parsley, sage, rosemary.
Let's just sing songs
no,
from the garden.
They don't want that.
Who did the garden party?
Rick Nelson.
Yeah. Right. So the thing about Eleanor Roosevelt that mm-hmm. I find very interesting, and this year, of course, 2009, there was the Women's Conference, which we talked about for a long time.
The Maria Shriver thing, right.
And she made a big deal that the women's conference, that there hasn't been a commission for women since John F. Kennedy did it in 1963. But it really wasn't his idea. He got coerced into doing it. And Eleanor Roosevelt got a lot of credit, but it wasn't her idea either. It was a woman named Esther Eggerstrom. I have it somewhere. Who's had the highest position in his administration. But Eleanor Roosevelt, of course, she was a pioneer for women. And when she became First Lady, she started doing these press conferences. But they needed women journalists. Mm-hmm. So when she realized that if she gave a press conference that there had to be women to cover it, she realized that she decided to do it all the time so that women would have to... She gave them a career, basically.
Wow.
Which I love that story. And then she did her radio show, and she did a column called Day to Day. And she was a feminist, but she actually did not want the ERA to be passed. You know, there were a lot of women back then, and now the Phyllis Schlafly. I mean, she wasn't like Phyllis Schlafly or that. She wasn't anti-women, but she wrote this and believed it, and I read it in a book, that a woman's first responsibility is to her husband and her family. Eleanor Roosevelt.
Oh.
Meanwhile, she did so much for us.
So was she like the Dr. Laura thing that, you know, you gotta serve him in bed?
Well, I don't know about all that, but
I don't see Eleanor and Frankie. I don't.
Well, they each had their own playmates,
yes,
didn't they?
I think they did.
But
they're back to the old thing. Mm-hmm. I think they all did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so go on.
I think she had a lover that was a woman, right?
Yeah.
That was
kind of a thing.
But when she was First Lady, Marian Anderson, who was an African-American opera singer, was supposed to sing at Constitution Hall, and they wouldn't let her. The Daughters of American Revolution, which she was a part of them, they didn't want her because she was black. Eleanor Roosevelt resigned.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. This is a great story.
This is wonderful.
And Marian Anderson ended up singing at Lincoln...
Center.
Not Lincoln Center. The Lincoln...
Memorial.
Thank you. Sorry. Brain freeze. Yeah. So and that was all Eleanor Roosevelt.
Wow.
So she stood up. She stood up and she resigned. I mean, that to resign from the Daughters of American Revolution was a big, big deal. Yeah, she also wrote the Declaration of the United Nations, Declaration of Human... Here I am. I it's in my book, but my book's right here. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, Eleanor Roosevelt, I mean, I remember, you know, back in high school, and I remember very little from high school, to be honest with you, but I remember doing a report on Eleanor Roosevelt and being so blown away by this woman that, you know, it's like, why don't we have more like that? But we did.
What was also so admirable about her and amazing about her was that she came from privilege, and she went into the slums of New York City. She was like Princess Diana. Except she didn't look like her.
Right.
But, I mean, that takes such courage. She stepped away from her family's expectations of her to go to... And she had a horrible growing up. Her father was an addict, and he died when she was young, and she never understood what was going on. And she grew up in a very... One of those sort of like the little princess, miserable.
Right.
And she never had anybody... You know, her mother would say, oh, you're not pretty. And, you know, she went through all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went off to school, and there was a headmistress that absolutely... mentored her and gave her confidence and shaped her. And she talks about her all the time, how what an influence she had on her. And, her, you know, her cousin, she married her cousin.
Right.
There were six cousins, I believe. Yeah.
Right.
So, but they all came from, you know, the aristocratics, they all want to keep everybody in the family.
Well, like Teddy Roosevelt, I mean...
Right, that was her cousin, who
right.
was the president before her husband was.
Right, and Teddy Roosevelt and FDR were distant cousins. They
right.
were not very closely related, but his name helped FDR get elected.
Of course, absolutely, and I think that's where she met him. I think she met him at, you know, his swearing in. I think Teddy Roosevelt, that's where she met Franklin.
Oh,
Something like that, yeah. Her story is fantastic.
Yeah. No,
she's very brave, very, very brave.
So, okay. So, yeah, you know, there were some wonderful... Now, what do you think about Michelle Obama... doing the childhood obesity
thing.
Well,
I knew that was coming when she started with the garden. Yeah.
Right.
And she learned it from her own. She said that when she was in Chicago, I think, I don't know if she brought her kids for a checkup, but she said it was a pediatrician that said you have to do things a different way because like everybody else, you go to school, you have ballet class, there's no time for dinner, you go to the drive-thru.
Yeah, that's right.
Got to get rid of those drive-thrus.
I know.
So I think she firsthand, you know, was told by a pediatrician, yeah. And when I saw that garden, I said, "Oh, she's going to do it. She's going to." And it's really about, it's up here to just get everybody to think differently about food. I mean, like, here we are making this. It's taken a long time.
Because we're talking.
But the truth of it is, it does take a time and energy to eat healthy. And you have to make the time.
The other problem is, it is more expensive.
I just said that.
It's more
backwards.
It is more expensive to eat healthy, real food than to eat the... You know, than to eat the bad for you fast food takeout thing.
Yeah.
In fact, in the movie, in Sicko?
Oh.
The family, it's cheaper for them to feed the entire family going through McDonald's than to create a fresh, healthy meal. I know.
This food that I made today, I got, you know, at several different places. I go to one place, like I won't buy my produce at a certain place because it's not natural. I go to my farmer's market. And truthfully, I mean, I love it. I'm just very into it. But it's big, 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 big part of my job. And I'm very proud of the fact that I raised my children healthy because I took the time. I was a stay-at-home mom, so I didn't... I mean, now that I'm a working mom, it's a whole different thing. And, of course, you just want to get it done. And it's exhausting and tiring, but touch wood, I have healthy children. And they understand... They eat crap, but they know it's crap.
Mm-hmm.
That's they don't... There are a lot of kids in our country that... actually think soda's a food.
Right.
I mean, Ronald Reagan is
a vegetable.
And did you see that series that Diane Sawyer did when she went into the Appalachian Mountains and they were all drinking Mountain Dew and none of them have any teeth? That was an amazing show. Yeah.
That's what you get when you hike the Appalachian Trail. They like not having any teeth.
No,
they don't. Because I was going to make a dirty joke.
All right. You ready for a taste?
Okay.
I'm going to give it to you without even a cracker. Just
let
me get you a good little bite here. Get a little bit of everything. I hope somebody out there is...
Okay.
Here you go. It's okay if you don't like it.
Oh, my God. That's...
Is it good?
Delicious.
I'll see if it's missing anything.
Oh, my God, Amy. That's so good.
It's all...
So there's that avocado.
Lime juice.
I
could do a little more lime juice, could you?
Sure. Avocado, heirloom tomatoes.
Or any kind of tomato.
Tomatoes. Mango.
Peach. You could use a peach.
Wow. Eat a peach? Almond Brothers pan.
There you go.
Lime juice. Mm. What else? Parsley.
Parsley, garlic. Salt and pepper.
Uh-huh.
And that's it.
Olive oil.
And olive oil. I could even do more olive oil.
It doesn't need more.
Okay.
That's delicious.
And you could just, but this is only good for a couple of days.
No, we're going to eat
all. There you go.
That's dinner.
There you go. All right, then.
See, now here's the problem with my kid. My kid would sit down and eat this whole bowl.
Good. And letter.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. This has got more antioxidants in it. I mean, this is just nothing but pure everything that you want.
You know what? I could make this.
Actually, now that I'm thinking, this is perfect because it even has protein. Avocado, you know, they say avocado is the perfect food because it's protein, it's got good fat, it's got fiber, it's a fruit, it's a vegetable. Who knows what it is, but it's good.
It's delicious.
Very good.
Mm. I spent my first, I don't know how many years, not eating avocado because it looked weird. And the texture, you know, turned some people off. But once I, decided to really try it, oh, my God, I love avocados. And it's fat. There's a lot of fat,
yeah,
but it's good fat.
We love good fat. We love any kind of fat.
Mm.
So, yeah. And then you can, for a meal, you can get a taco shell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people like to put meat or chicken. You can saute some chicken and make a burrito. And this is your, you know.
Or do fish tacos with this. Wow.
The fish is salsa and fish, like I was saying before, is really, really good.
Now, David, my boyfriend, is very into wines. With this, champagne.
Oh.
He pairs foods, and I'm waiting for the phone to ring.
I think I have some champagne. It's almost wine o'clock, isn't it? it's wine o'clock somewhere.
No, I've learned, you know, he pairs wine with food. And
yes. Right.
Champagne would go beautifully with this.
Oh. I wouldn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how the soup's doing.
Mm, how's the soup doing?
Well, I need a spoon. And they're right by you.
Okay. A spoon. Like this kind of spoon?
Yeah.
Or do you want a smaller spoon?
It's fine. It's your for you.
I get to taste the soup.
All right, we'll just start with the broth, and then we'll have a carrot and a potato as we go.
Okay, no cilantro and no sweet onions, because I don't like cilantro or onion. But yeah, you know, I was never a real wine fan before I started dating David. I mean, I liked good red wine, but what I learned with him is that, you know, you have to pair the wine, and how people will go to a bar and just drink wine without food, it's so much better with the right food. To just have wine without any food to go with it, it's not that good.
Well, I do it all the time.
I know, but when you pair it...
When I cook, I have a glass of wine.
But when you pair it with the right foods, like certain... I love Pinot Noir.
Mm.
And that goes better with... Well, Pinot goes with a lot of different things because it's very light. But like if you're going to have a heavy cab, you want like a good piece of meat with it.
I know that. I do. As living in California.
Uh-huh.
And for a while, the Los Angeles Times would do a wine. Every once a week, they would do a whole thing in the food section about wine. So I learned a lot about wines.
Mm-hmm.
And the right glasses. You have certain glasses. You know, you use open glass for red wine.
Right.
So, all right. What do you think? It's still hot below.
Okay. Yum. And it's a potato and a carrot.
It's a potato and a carrot. You can eat it. It's good.
Mm.
Yeah, see, very simple. Make a nice salad. There you go. You eat that for a couple days.
Wow. Now, what else did you put in here? Now,
I sautéed onion and butter. Now, I did use butter because that makes it really good. And I do have a little Paula Deen in me, apparently, because she puts butter in everything. I just sautéed the butter and the carrots and some carrots and some onion and some butter. Then I did boxed low-sodium organic chicken broth.
Okay.
Homemade is better, but... and then I just put in the carrots and the potato and some salt and pepper and a little sugar.
Wow.
I didn't even put garlic. I forgot to put garlic. Oh, don't tell.
Oh, no garlic.
But it's good.
Now, Merlot, there was a reason that Merlot is sort of like the low rent.
Well, I learned from my boyfriend, who knows a lot about wine also, that Merlot is a combination of different wines. It's not a pure wine. It's a combo of other ones.
I don't know. I'm waiting for David to call back again and tell us. But I know he's not big on Merlot. But, you know, if you saw the movie Sideways.
I loved that movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, they were wine very snobs don't
snobby.
Like Merlot.
Yeah.
Mm. That is so good.
Yeah.
I wish
very
I could,
fresh.
I wish I could share it with
like
you.
Like Emerald says, smell TV or taste TV.
Mm.
Wow.
Wow.
You know, for some reason I'm thinking about Lou Hoover, who was Herbert Hoover's wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know as much about all the first ladies. Like I said, I tend to be interested in the women that nobody's ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did do some research on Lou Hoover, and I like her name because it's a boy's name.
Yes.
But
was she Louise?
No.
Just Lou.
I think just Lou.
Yeah.
But what was interesting about her, and her husband, before he was the president, made a fortune mining. And they went over to China during the Boxer Revolution.
Okay.
And she was, she could speak Chinese. So she was like one of the first women to speak Chinese. She spoke several languages. And she also was the first woman to get her degree in science, some kind of a science degree. And she was a first. So I love the firsts.
Mm-hmm.
She also helped start the Girl Scouts. She was one of the leaders of the Girl Scouts.
It's amazing. You know, even with these presidents who were just so god-awful, often the women... You know, that were with them. Did
she really helped him in China during when he was there fighting because she knew Chinese. And she also learned how to fire a gun. And that was also a really big thing for some reason. I don't know why. But he came from money. They met at Stanford, I think. Gosh, I'm sorry. It's been a while since I read about Lou Hoover. But she was one of those first ladies. She also redid the whole White House with her own money. You know, a lot of cool stuff.
Wow.
She wasn't actually the most flamboyant and fascinating of the first ladies.
Who was?
Oh, which is... Dolly Madison was really cool. She saved some. I think it was her. that when the White House was under attack or being going to be attacked, she saved some really important papers, and it was very dangerous what she did. She it's probably in this book right here. Or you know what? If you give me, should I go?
Where are you going to go?
Get my first lady's book.
Go ahead.
Book?
Oh yeah. Okay, Amy's going to go get her first lady's book because it is President's Day, and we've been doing the cooking and the tasting and the schmoozing, but also talking about first ladies here. I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am, because I have the advantage of getting to eat the products that Amy's making here. Quick programming note if you're just joining us: tomorrow night there will not be a show. I'm going to be down here. I'm out in Los Angeles. Wednesday. Yes, Bottle Shock is also a very good movie. Wednesday, hopefully, we will be coming to you an hour early, all right, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, live from a recording studio in Santa Monica with Jackson Brown. All right, we still look on target for that. Thursday and Friday, I will be down in San Diego, and bringing you music and conversation and a little bit of fun. All right, so yes. I saw Bottle Shock, and it was excellent. I think it's on HBO this week or this month. So yes, it's good movie. So again, no show tomorrow. Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, with Jackson Brown. Yes, Wednesday is Jackson Brown Day. And then Thursday and Friday, we will be coming to you live from San Diego. If you want to read a little bit about the music conference I'm going to, I have it linked from my blog at RadioOrNot.com. It's an event called Michelle Clark's Sunset Sessions. And, there's going to be a lot of great music there. I'm hoping that Jason Mraz will come on with me. I'm hoping to have, a bunch of the artists there, a lot of whom you probably have not heard of before, but that's sort of what this whole conference is about, is introducing new artists to the radio community and also to music supervisors, the people who put music in film and TV, and hopefully I'll talk to a couple of them too, because that's a fascinating job. All right, so Amy's got her first lady book.
Just real quick about Lou Hoover, yes, I found my little notes. She got a geological degree. She was the first woman to get a degree in geology, and she was a map maker, which is cool. She and her husband, they made maps. They interpreted maps from other countries, and so that, they were kind of nerdy, but they
did
well.
Herbert Hoover was such a bad president.
Supposedly. But she was the first lady to deliver a radio address.
Wow.
Yeah, I love that. So thank you. Eleanor Roosevelt was not the first. Oh. Mm.
Lou Hoover. Who knew?
Yeah. Okay. I'll see if I can find my Dolly Madison, because I thought she was the one that saved that important stuff.
Was she a baker?
Well, she loved ice cream. That's why the Dolly Madison ice cream. That's the thing about the ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see what it says. Oh, yeah, this makes great reading. Reading on
radio, huh?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't want to sit here and read. So we'll talk about something else.
All right.
We can talk about bloomers. I know a lot about that. I love talking about clothing. And I don't know, first ladies, they're always talking about what they're wearing. Even recently, Michelle Obama was on with, who was she on with? One of the morning guys. I don't know if it was Stephanopoulos or who it was. But he said, I'm going to have to, it was Matt Lauer.
I have to ask you who you're wearing?
Or just bringing up the subject about, and she's so cool about it. She's really cool about it. But women, were always forced to wear these ridiculous clothes, the corsets that were made of whale bones, and they literally were fainting because they couldn't get any air. I mean, everybody remembers that scene in Gone with the Wind,
right,
when she's holding on to the post and they're pulling it in, and she's like, tighter, mammy, tighter. Yeah, but women had to wear these ridiculous clothes, and they had to wear long skirts that swept the ground and always got dirty, and they were doing laundry forever. And then in, I think it was early part of the 1800s, Franny Kemble, who was an English Jewish woman, came from an acting family, very interesting woman. I want to put her in a show. She was really the first one to wear what was called the Turkish pantaloons. So what made them so great was that they were pants.
Right.
And I always think of Elizabeth Cady Stanton talking about when, you know, years later when Amelia Bloomer, who had a magazine called The Lily, it was Elizabeth Miller who was, her husband was like a governor, a cousin of Elizabeth Cady Stanton. She did a drawing. She saw from Frances Wright and Fanny Kemble that these women were wearing these pantaloons. It was scandalous. So she did a drawing and she gave it to Amelia Bloomer, who had a magazine, a newspaper called The Lily, that Elizabeth Cady Stanton wrote for. So they put it in, they put a picture of it, and they did a story about it in The Lily, and it became known as The Bloomer because of Amelia Bloomer. Wow. She didn't design it, she didn't wear it, she just put it in her paper.
Wow, and they became known as Bloomers.
The Bloomers. So, and they were scandalous.
Right.
Because women, first of all, they were short, they came up like, up, you know, mid, like a couple
right,
of inches above the ankle.
They wore them under skirts, right?
Yes. But the skirts didn't go to the floor. What happened was the pantaloons came down to like here, and then the skirts came below the knee but above the ankle. And
right.
This was scandalous. But I always think about Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who fell in love with them. They were so practical. Women were just, you know, they were so impractical, these clothes. Just like today, we're still wearing high heels that are really
right.
ridiculous. But Elizabeth, there's always a picture I get of Elizabeth Cady Stanton because she talks about how much she loved the Bloomers because she'd be holding her baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'd want to go up the stairs and she'd hold the candle. But then she'd have to pick up her dress.
Right.
So she'd have to pick up the dress and put down the baby and pick up the candle, and she couldn't do all three. So she was like going crazy trying to get up the stairs with the candle and the baby. And then the Bloomers came along. She's like, oh, I've got the baby, I've got the candle, and up she goes, you know.
Right.
So for 6 years, the women tried to wear the Bloomers, but every time they went out, they got so much crap. Lucy Stone in particular, Elizabeth Cady Stanton wrote her a letter and said, all right, forget the Bloomers, because every time we go out with them on, all they talk about are the Bloomers, and we're talking about the right to vote and divorce reform and education for women, and all they want to talk about are the Bloomers. What has changed?
Nothing.
Not in that area.
But so when did women start wearing pants?
Well, you know, Gail Collins just came out with a book this year, a fantastic book called When Everything Changed.
Mm-hmm.
And as late as 1960, a woman went to traffic court to pay a ticket. This is right out of Gail Collins' book. She went to traffic court to pay a ticket for her boss. And the judge said, how dare you show up in this court with pants? Go home and put on a dress. And that was the law. 1960.
Oh, my God. Now, look at Hillary Clinton, you know, pantsuit. One was, you know,
yeah,
but
I don't know when it became acceptable or, you know, but ridiculous, archaic laws about clothing and attire, just insane.
Well, you know, and we have this double standard of women. It used to be, you know, women had to look good and men can just be distinguished and they didn't have to look good. I think everything has changed with this, with the advent of, you know, video. And this is a topic that we've had, you know, we've discussed on the show here before recently, where I don't think, you know, I think one of the reasons Scott Brown was elected is because he looks good.
He does look good.
He does. And
but it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be. But I also think, that, you know, the reason Sarah Palin is as popular as she is, the reason she was picked to be John McCain's running mate,
of course,
is because of how she looked,
uh-huh,
and because the family came right out of Central Casting. I really think you will not see enough, but she's still ridiculously popular, even though her approval ratings
yes.
are going down.
Yes.
People are still, she went to some NASCAR thing yesterday, and people are going crazy
yeah,
for
her. Yeah,
she's
a rock star.
Right.
Sadly.
But I think so much of it, I mean, and it even started with Kennedy, with the televised debates, and Kennedy and Nixon.
Right, of course.
But it's so much so in your face. Everything is on video now. Everything. Pretty boy John Edwards, as someone just wrote.
Mm-hmm.
I think that gone is the day when you will see a Richard Nixon get elected or a Lyndon Baines Johnson get elected, because I honestly believe Mitt Romney will probably be the nominee in 2012 for the Republicans because he's, you know, he's photogenic, he's telegenic. I really think, you know, as much as it pains me to say it, Bernie Sanders, Dennis Kucinich, and I keep going to this theme because I honestly believe it, because the average American person doesn't pay attention to politics. They want to see somebody who looks good on TV, and more it's going to be the candidate. You ever watch the movie with Robert Redford?
Of course.
Well, that's what we've deteriorated
yeah.
into, and it is the world's largest reality show.
Yes.
And you got to look
such a
the
great
part.
Way to put it. It is the world's largest reality show. Yeah, I mean, Barack Obama is a good-looking guy.
Yes. He is. And he, you know, I really, obviously it's 3 years away, but November 2012, I guarantee you, well, it'll be Obama for the Democrats, but whoever the Republican nominee is probably going to be Mitt Romney or someone else who looks good. And I'm telling you, Marco Rubio of Florida is damn dangerous because he's a young, good-looking, Hispanic, very articulate guy, and he's a rising star in the Republican Party, and he is as right-wing wacko as they come, and that's what worries me.
Yeah. You know, this is a little off the subject, but I wanted to talk to you about this a couple weeks ago when I read in the LA Times, there was a picture of Barack saying he went to the banks and said, I want my money back. Mm-hmm. Remember, you and I had talked, I'm almost afraid to bring it up with you
yes.
because you're so, but, you know, you keep saying that he's letting things go.
Well, but he backtracked after that
what?
About the bonuses and said, well, you know, baseball players get ridiculous amounts of money and... You know, some of them earn it. You know, they're sharp guy. I mean, he speaks out of both sides of his mouth too often. And for him to defend the ridiculous compensation that the executives in these banks are making.
He defended them?
Yes, he did.
See, that's not what I got from what I was reading in the LA Times.
When you talked about the baseball players get paid ridiculous amounts of money?
I didn't see that. I'm talking about what I read in the paper was that it was right after they came out with that they were getting these big bonuses and he... put something, you know, I'm not as on it as you are, but it looked to me like he was not going to put up
with it. He did one day, and then the next day he talked about the fact that, well, that baseball players make obscene amounts of money, too, and, you know, they earn a good salary, and, you know, it's sort of understandable.
Same thing. We didn't give them any money.
No.
Yeah, it just burns everybody's up that these banks are getting away with it.
Well, and part of it is, you know, these are his big donors, and that's all the
Sorry,
more reason. Yes, all the more reason that we need real campaign finance reform, and it's just going to get more difficult now with the Supreme Court ruling in the Citizens United case.
Oh, now you reminded me of somebody that nobody knows about.
Okay.
A woman who ran for president
yes.
in 1960.
Okay.
Margaret Chase Smith.
Okay.
She was the first Republican woman. Yeah. She got all the way to San Francisco. She lost to Barry Goldwater.
Wow.
But she was from Rhode Island, I think, somewhere in New England where they all know who she is. I'm thinking, I haven't thought about her in a while. But you made me think of her because she would not take a dime for her campaign. She actually sent money back when people sent it in because she thought it would be, you know, tainted.
Well, but
she lost.
But back then...
wasn't it the 60s?
Exactly. And you didn't need as much money now. And you know why candidates need so much money for an election, for a campaign? To buy television time.
Yeah, advertising.
It's all... So that can spend the money.
All the time. I think they say they spend billions of dollars, and if they could just put that straight into education,
now,
it's just it's so wrong.
Each candidate who qualifies, this is my thought, we need to get the money out of elections. And first of all, now it's a different world than it was even in the 60s because now it's not just the broadcast television, it's cable TV. Broadcast TV, sorry, those are the public airwaves. They're licensed to... the stations,
right.
But more and more, you know, the signals that go over the airwaves are getting less and less, and it's more cable, it's more satellite, it's more, you know, they're not so much the public airwaves. But I think every broadcast channel and cable channel and satellite channel should be required to give up so much time each year for political campaigns.
That's a great idea.
And that's just the price they pay. The problem is so much, it's so much of their income. But that's what I think we need. And there should be some kind of qualifying, just like you have to qualify to get on the ballot. Once candidates qualify, they earn so much airtime. And, you know, now that we have the internet, I think there should be, you know, election websites, channels, so that each candidate should be required to fill out this form. It's a unified, you know, thing so that it's not all glitz and production values. Each one has to fill out this election questionnaire, and they're all basically set up the same way. And so you're really comparing issues. So they have so much time on all the networks, on all the TV channels, And they all go, you know, they all have a page on this Election Central website.
So they're just going to lose that money then. That's what you're saying. They have to give up that, and that's why it will never happen, because money drives everything.
I know. And now that, again, now that Citizens United passed the Supreme Court, the corporations have so much more influence, even in this country, that it'll never happen. But that's the only way we will ever have really fair elections.
Yeah. I hear Tom Hartman talking about this all the time. He should be president.
Well, I love Tom Hartman. Yeah. He's one of the smartest men I know.
Yes, he sure is. That's what I'm saying.
You know, and I never, I'm in a different place than Tom. I mean, he's just brilliant. He's very book smart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come from the emotional side of it. I know what I think. I know what's fair and what's not fair. I may not have all the book knowledge, but I certainly have the passion. And coming, you know, as a 50-year-old woman who's, you know, been beaten down, I mean, 10 years ago, you know, you're supposed to be able to progress in life and keep doing better and better. And here, we're both sitting here a hell of a lot worse off than we were 10 and 15 years ago.
Economically. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Motherhood.
Yes. Well, but not only motherhood, it's what the economy has given us. And as much as the right gets angry when we keep blaming it on George Bush, he's the one who squandered our country's great fortune, the surplus we had that he inherited from Bill Clinton, and blew it on these two wars that we shouldn't be in. You know, and drove our country into the ground. Economically, and so we're trying to dig out of it. And you know, I give Obama a lot of grief because of a lot of mistakes he's making. But the bottom line is he did inherit it, and the whole world has been sucked into this morass. And you know, it's going to be a long climb out of it if we can get out of it. I think we're in for a massive worldwide economic reset. You know, I think we're, you know, there was this big collapse, and it's going to be a reset at a lower level, and it's going to have to start coming back from there.
More chocolate
and wine and salsa.
But I'm thinking about Victoria Woodhull, who was the first woman to run for president, and she wasn't on the ballot. She ran in 1872, and she wasn't on the ballot because she was 34 years old.
Oh, she's too young.
Yeah.
You have to be 35.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But she was the first woman to run for president. And she didn't have, she had five years of formal education.
There was no television back there, so she didn't have to buy advertising. But how did they get their message out?
Well, how she got her message out was money. She made a killing on Wall Street. She was the first female stockbroker. She and her sister. And
some things never change.
Right. Well, see, here's the thing that was so fascinating about Victoria Woodhull is that she was just one of those people that was very, very smart, just naturally very smart, and wanted to learn. So she surrounded herself with smart people. But it was Cornelius Vanderbilt that was her ticket.
Vanderbilt?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
She knew that he was in New York City and that he was the richest man in America. And she was a clairvoyant. You know, she and her sister went around the country healing, doing hands-on healing, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And she got her sights set on Cornelius Vanderbilt because she knew from newspapers. Everything was newspapers then. Newspapers were everything. He would open his door to anybody. People knew that they could go knock on Cornelius Vanderbilt's door, and he would say, "You never know where your next idea is coming from." So she and her sister, who they both were beautiful women, she was an actress, Victoria Woodhull, for a while, so she knew how to act, and she was tall and statuesque and beautiful and charismatic, and she charmed her way into his life, she and her sister. Her sister was his mistress. He was married, and she would speak to his dead mother. Now, in that time, spiritualism was huge. This was after the Civil War. Everybody lost people. They wanted to communicate with the dead. She had the gift. She could talk to the dead. So she would talk to his mother. And then, this is kind of I'll try to be real quick about it, but when she was in San Francisco for a while, she was the breadwinner in her family because her husband was a doctor drunk. And she was on stage, and she met another woman on stage. Now, they did more than just act on stage. And that's why she was called the prostitute who ran for president, because she had that reputation. She did what she had to do to get by. She had to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But she met a woman.
What year?
18. She was born in 1837. Wow. So, and she ran for president in 1872. She was 34 years old at the time, but she was in her 20s and doing all the stuff. She came to New York. But when she was in San Francisco, she met a girl named Josie, a woman named Josie, who was also an actress. Josie ended up in New York, and this was during the time of Jim Fisk. And that whole September, oh gosh, sorry, my brain's not working as well. But Josie was a mistress to, he was called the robber baron, I think. He was a brilliant financier and Cornelius Vanderbilt's archenemy. They were competitive. So the men would come over. He would go visit his mistress, and he'd have meetings with the men. And they never thought the women were listening. So Josie would listen to everything. And they would go to the houses of prostitution. Victoria Woodhull was friendly with all that with the big houses of prostitution. She actually would bring them medicine and sponges and all kinds of things that women prostitutes needed to keep their bodies together. So Josie would listen and hear what the men were talking about, and she would tell Victoria Woodhull. And then Victoria Woodhull would go into a little trance and tell Cornelius Vanderbilt, oh, by so-and-so, this is true.
Wow.
So he thought she was fantastic. So when the time came to make the killing on Wall Street, he gave her, because women couldn't even trade. They weren't allowed in. But she ended up, I'm so sorry that I can't remember the date, because it's a famous date in our history. It was like the fall, Black Friday. Black Friday is what it was in 18-something. Black Friday, when the stock market crashed because they inflated the price of gold. It was Vanderbilt and Fisk and all these. The historians must be laughing because this is like such a big story and I'm getting it all wrong. But she walked out of there with $700,000. And what did she do with it? She opened... She opened a stock brokerage firm with her sister, and they were called the gals of Wall Street. They were the only women, and they did it to empower women. They wanted women. They had a separate entrance for women. They helped the prostitutes save their money. Women would come to them. She wanted to help women, and that's what she did. She put her money where her mouth was. I mean, she grew up poor, dirt poor, like really
poor. $700,000 back then is, $700 million.
She bought art and clothing, and she opened this stock brokerage firm on Wall Street. She had a newspaper. She was the first woman in America, first publisher. Victoria Woodhull. This is all before she ran for president. She made her money. She wanted to live the way she wanted to live. She wanted to help women. She started the Equal Rights Party. She went down to Washington. She spoke to the Senate Judiciary Committee demanding the right to vote because she had money. But she had what the other women didn't have. Elizabeth Cady Stanton went down, Susan B. Nobody paid any attention to them. And then Victoria Woodhull shows up. She's gorgeous, and she was an actress. So she just had everything that, and they listened to her. And it was called the Woodhull Memorial, and all the other women embraced her. But then when her past caught up to her, it took her down. Her family and her past, and they knew she was, sexually active. She lived with her husband, her ex-husband, her lover, all at the same time.
Wow.
So she was too scandalous. And they wrote, even Elizabeth Cady Stanton, they wrote her out of the books because she was such a scandal. The first woman to run for president. I just love her so much.
All right. Well, an appropriate story to end our President's Day show with. Amy Simon, her website is CheeriosInMyUnderwear.com. I've got a link to it from my blog at RadioOrNot.com. So check it out. There's all kinds of fun stuff. Amy, again, has been on with me on the Air America show a lot, and there are links to those interviews if you want to go back and listen to some of those. They're all up there, and all kinds of goodies, fun female facts, and lots of good reading material, too. All right, we're going to go enjoy the soup and the puddings.
It's wine o'clock.
It is wine o'clock. So we're going to sign off here. Again, programming note, no show tomorrow night. I'm going to go enjoy L.A., pick up my boyfriend, and enjoy L.A. tomorrow night. Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, with Jackson Brown. Joy, I'm so glad you're enjoying it, but we're not going to do one more hour. I'm exhausted. I've been going since very, very early this morning, and we're going to go hang out together and be buddies. All right, so yes, the soup is on yum, and I will talk to you, don't forget, Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, Radio or Not. Thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.
Bye.